You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Good evening, everyone. This is Rico Muhammad filling in for Kevin Rutherford on the Rates and Lanes podcast. Coming to you live tonight from Hammond, Louisiana at the Petro. Tonight we were supposed to have a guest broker on board, but our guest broker, go ahead and get this out of the way. He had a situation come up where, it's kind of a feather in the hat of you guys and the conversations that we've been having that shows that we're actually starting to move the needle in this industry just a little bit. We posted in the Rate Per Mile Masters Facebook page group that we were going to have a guest on representing a different brokerage firm. We're not going to put names or anything out there. But long story short, these companies, and most of these major companies now have people that are on staff and monitor social media, and we started to create a little bit of a blip. And my guy that I was going to have on as my guest tonight, I guess he thought that it was just going to be more of a casual thing, and then when the questions started to pour in, he didn't really want to get in over his head, and I understood that, and so I graciously, and I think we allowed him to kind of be able to back away, because I didn't want him to get into any kind of trouble as far as, he's not an authorized representative for that company, even though he works for the company, he's not an authorized representative, and at the end of the day, that company has a brand that they must protect. And this is something, this is a lesson that we all should avail ourselves to. The company has a brand that they, they work hard to build up, and they want to protect it, and didn't want to come on our air and maybe get ambushed or something like that, even though I was going to try to give them a heads up and give them an opportunity. And it still may be a possibility that they may be willing to come on and take some questions or whatever. And I understood some of the questions that they, looking at it from both vantage points, they saw that, we had a couple of questions about different things from people that were more of a, you really don't know all the details of what happened. They were talking about the tension issues, some other stuff. And, there's two sides to every story. That's fair. Like I said, I understood at the end of the day, and I didn't want my contact to feel like, I was going to twist his arm and hold him to coming on here, and I didn't want him to, everything is real. Go into work the next morning and get handed a pink slip because he's done something that he wasn't authorized to do. So no worries, no harm, no foul. We are here. We are still going to keep on doing what we're doing. I appreciate you guys for joining us. And, we just kind of found this information out a little later in the day about our guest and the situation that came up. Moving right along, I sent out a link today. C.H. Robinson put out a little report that I got, and I put a link out on that on the Rate Per Mile Masters group. And it's talking about temperature-controlled demand over the Southeast right now. And it's a pretty interesting report. It says it's 2,100, that C.H. Robinson should be able to handle close to 2,100 unique locations across 8 states over the next 122 days. They're going to be moving somewhere in the neighborhood of 33,000 temperature control loads. There's 270 loads per day, according to their report, from April through June. June, of course, everybody should know, is the top peak month for produce. If you have a reefer that you are going to be running and running hard, you probably should have already gotten in the Thermo King and got your reefer unit serviced. and made sure that she was in tip-top condition and that she was ready to roll. And the other thing, you guys, this podcast and show really revolves around your participation. So if you have any questions, anything that you want to bring to the table, go ahead and press number one so we can get you in queue. And we have a couple of callers in queue right now, and we'll start working you guys and mixing you guys in as we go throughout the rest of the show. But I just wanted to get across what happened with our guests. First and foremost, spread bad news quickly is the way that I was always taught. Wanted to go over the real quick temperature controlled report that C.H. Robinson put out. And now we're going to jump right into the weekly DAT trend lines report for the week of May 25th through the 31st. And we're going to jump into the national van demand and capacity portion of that report right now. And the spot market activity paused for Memorial Day, but weekly freight volumes declined less than expected. As a result, the national load-to-truck ratio rose 7.8%, rebounding from 2.9 to the April average of 3.1 loads per truck. And I also think that a little bit of the bounce that we're going to see across the board and on all of the segments is due to, of course, we are at the CSA crackdown week. So I think that that definitely is having some effect on it. I've came out of Laredo. I'm just over in Hammond. I'm headed back to Atlanta. They were working hard and heavy in Texas, but me being a Kevin Rutherford fan and being very fuel conscious, I'm only driving 57 miles per hour. So by the time I get to the inspection stations, they're pretty much full with everybody that was running 65, 70 miles an hour coming through Texas. So I get to ride right on by. I did, however, have to go into the one scale right here in, right before you get to Hammond. And just rolled across the scale. Everything was good. Just kept moving because, like I said, everybody was busy. They was already tied up with all the guys that were going down the road blowing the profit out the stacks. So that's the van, U.S. van to market. We're going to go jump into the flatbed. And all the load board activity for Memorial Day weekend last week, the flatbed load availability declined less than capacity. The resulting load-to-truck ratio rose 17% from 34.2 loads per truck to 39.9. The May ratio eased 6.5%. The average ratio of May declined 6.5 from 38.9 to 36.4. So it's a slight let up in the seasonal capacity on the flatbed side of things. And jumping over to reefers, the reefer ratio dips 5.9%. Weekly load board activity declined across the board last week due to Memorial Day holiday, but reefers available capacity expanded relative to demand to yield a 5.9 decline in the load-to-truck ratio from 8.7 to 8.1. Rates are still fairly solid. We're going to jump back over into the van as far as the rates go. The national average of van rates rose 1 cent to $1.98. That's the national average on the van side of things. We're going to jump back into the flatbed on the rate side of things. For the national average, we are at $2.36. Flatbed rates were unchanged as a national average last week at $2.36 per mile, 1 cent increase in the line haul rate, offset one decline in the average fuel surcharge. And as far as reefers are concerned, reefer rates dropped 1 cent. The national average rate for reefers dropped 1 cent last week to $2.32 per mile due to the decline in the average fuel surcharge. So that is, in a nutshell, a real quick coverage of the DAT trend lines. And now we're going to jump really quickly over into the weekly report from the USDA on the fruit and vegetable truck rate report. The markets that are showing a shortage for this week is Imperial Valley, California, onions. San Joaquin Valley also has onions. They have a shortage there. Florida is showing potatoes, but I'm getting some mixed information coming out of Florida. Some people are saying that the potatoes are all gone out of Florida, and I haven't been to Florida, so I can't really speak to it with authority, but I know that they're still moving melons pretty heavy out of Florida. Eastern North Carolina, of course, will be sweet potatoes. I was over in Eastern North Carolina last week. That we're headed north as far as the produce market goes in Eastern North Carolina. But, you know, my operation, I stayed below the Mason-Dixon line. It wasn't a whole lot of produce coming out of North Carolina last week, going in the direction that I wanted to go in. New York is showing a shortage. Lower Rio Grande Valley, which in Mexico Crossing, I just came out of Laredo, and it is hopping down in Laredo. Let me tell you, it is hopping down that way. So if you got a reefer, Laredo would be a great place. If you can just get close to Laredo, they'll pay you the deadhead down there to pick some stuff up. Don't cut your nose off to spite your face just to get the text. You know, that's one of the biggest things, one of the biggest problems that we have is people trying to get to the hot market and cutting rates to get there. The markets on spot market freight, unless you got a customer, please don't participate in that practice. You end up hurting yourself in the long run because the market could change on you. By the time you get down there, it could have dried up. So, you know, I strongly advise not to fall susceptible to trying to get to the hot market thinking that, okay, I'll make it up on the back end. If you know your numbers good enough and you're doing things, then that'll be good. That, you know what I'm saying? If you know your numbers, if you stay ahead of the game, then cool. You know, we can get you in there and you can knock that out. So that's pretty much what I had in a nutshell. Now I'm going to go to you guys because the show really revolves around you and your needs and how we can help service you and see if we can't help you get better rates, better lanes. So with that said, I'm going to go to my first caller. I need some more guys to jump on the lines. I'm going to go to my first caller that's calling from the 601. Caller, what is your name and where are you calling from?
Hello, are you talking to me, Rico?
Yes, sir, 601. That's you. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Well, I'm in Florida right now, Orlando.
All right, somebody can give us a full report of what's going on in Florida.
Well, no, I can't. I'm Landstar, and I use load board, and I booked a load back to New Jersey. So on the inspection, I haven't seen much activity. I've running down to Fort Lauderdale and back, and I haven't been inspected and hadn't had much or noticed much inspection going on. But my question is, I've got experience in end chemical tank.
Okay.
Is there a load board that I can be in an independent contractor that I can look at those opportunities?
I'm really not sure. That's end up and the chemical is a lot more specialized. I'm pretty sure that there is a load board, and I think a couple people have posted. Are you a member of the Rate for Mile Masters on Facebook page?
No, I'm not.
If you have access to that, I think someone posted in there once before, and I'll try and also make a note to try to see if I can't do a little research. But as far as trying to get on load boards and stuff like that, most of these load boards they trying to protect the integrity of their load board. And by doing so, they kind of have some requirements set up as far as they will only allow people that are have active motor carrier authority or broker authority or whatever to have access to those boards because they don't want, you know, they're only as good as their reputation, and they are trying to eliminate the double brokering and any of the other shady stuff that goes on in the transportation industry. So that's kind of why they have the different things, different parameters set up the way that they do to keep people from being able to get just free access or random access to the information that they have on their load boards. But I think that, you know, I'm going to start trying to do some research to see if you can find, and I know for a fact that you can find some information. If you go to USDA website, as far as not, maybe not so much on the chemical stuff, but as far as end dumps and stuff like that, you know, with grain hoppers and stuff, you may be able to find some information as far as what are good markets that are really hopping right now as far as those segments are concerned.
Okay, I'll look for that. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Will. All right, let's put Will back on. We got a caller from area code 917. Caller 917. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, how you doing, Rico? This is Darius. I'm in North Carolina right now. I was how are you, sir? I'm fine, thank you. I got a question for you. Have you ever go to Northeast like New York and Boston, Vermont, and Maine? Everywhere I look, they pay a lot more money to go up there. Is it because of the tolls or any other reason? Is there any other reason?
Pretty much it's because it's like getting paid to go to Florida any other time of the year. It's kind of a desolate area. Once you get into those areas, it's not a whole lot of stuff going on if you don't already have a shipper lined up. Usually going to be looking at a lot of deadhead to get out of those areas or get somewhere else, or the rates coming out of that particular market are going to be very, very slim. So that's why, you know, that's kind of the old adage, you're taking your backhaul with you, going in there for such a high rate that hopefully the rate that you get coming out of there will help balance out and equal out.
Oh, okay. Well, I have another question. Do you recommend, what do you think about in a truck stop?
I think internet truck stop is a decent low board. I no longer use internet truck stop. I use DAT. I had one time I had both. I'm a little bit more familiar and maybe a little bit more comfortable with the DAT format setup. And maybe do because, you know, they've done research and studies say that, you know, whoever your first acquaintance is or whatever, you're more apt to be more loyal to them. And I don't know if I'm falling under that influence or not, but I just like the way that DAT board is set up and the way it flows. To me, it just has a better flow. Some people like internet truck stop a little bit better.
Oh, okay. So what would you recommend for a first-time owner-operator with its own authority, DAT or internet truck stop? What do you think?
I'm a little bit biased, but for me and my money, I like all of the information that DAT has set up and the way it's formatted. Internet truck stop also, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus. They also have some nice tools and some nice features that are set up on internet truck stop. It's just, you know, this is what I would advise you to do. This will help you out tremendously. Call both companies up and ask them for a 1-week trial on their best load board. You know, get the best level that truck stop offers and get the best level of service that DAT offers, and they should be able to, they normally will give you a 1-week trial and run them side by side and see which one gives you the best return for your money or the best bang for your buck. That way you can look at them and make a determination for yourself. And you know, I don't want to influence you one way or the other as far as
right.
Which boat one.
Okay. That's great advice. Thank you very much, Rico. I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Not a problem. I appreciate the call. All right. We're going to put Darius back on hold, and we got a caller from the 252 area code. Caller from 252. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Did you say 252?
252.
Rico.
Yes.
Oh, can you hear me? Okay. Yes. This is Steve in North Carolina.
Hey, Steve, how you doing?
Good. Road checks so far haven't been too bad for me. North Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, New Jersey going up yesterday with nasty hazmat. I got a green light at every scale, and coming back down 95 today towards Columbia, got a green light with another poor hazmat on. Same thing. I hadn't seen an awful lot of activity. All the activity I really saw was in Virginia yesterday. One of the Mexican trucks was there, and, boy, they were real animated between them and DOT behind the scale. So I feel good about that because I got the green light. Rico, I'm going to be going out on my own in the next 10 months or so. I'm a company driver. They're a really good company. I'm like you. I know your story. I made what you made with Saya. I've been making it for 12 years, but I won't work at all. I feel like, you know, I'm not with Saya, but I know what you were making with Saya. I've read your story, and I'm in the same boat. I do LTL delivery all over the country, have all the all the designations you need and everything. But I want more control too. But I am really. You guys have really kind of put the bug in my ear to maybe try to go out on my own authority. I mean, I've really been looking very hard at either Landstar or Mercer all along, and it still may come down to that. I may want to get a little bit under the belt first, but maybe
right.
Y'all are just doing a great job of getting us a lot of education out here, and I want to tell you how much we appreciate it, especially us guys like me that are trying to absorb what we're learning, because we're not doing it yet for real,
Well, I'm glad that, looking at some different options that you did before may have thought that, because coming from that side of the road, when I first initially got the job at SIA and everything, I thought, great, okay, this is what I always wanted, home every day in my own bed, making good money, and all that's fine. And I talked to a fire driver the other day, and he was like, "Man, you gave up running line haul for fire to buy your own truck." it was a little funny, but I said, he said, "Why would you do that?" And I said, "What you just said, it's the freedom, because now I have the ability to run my business the way that I want to run my business as I want to take off. With fire, I had 5 weeks worth of vacation, but I can take 5 weeks off at one time and don't have to worry about reporting to anybody or calling in or whatever without any repercussions. And that's
yeah.
The beauty of being able to be the captain of your own ship and have your own business and do it the way that you want to do it. The only thing that, I try to give this word of caution out because, I take very seriously the opportunity that Kevin Rutherford has given me, and I don't want people to overlook the basic necessities as far as making sure when you decide that you want to get into this business, that you do the hard work and that you make sure that you get your numbers rock solid, that you take time to actually break down and get your operating costs together. Know what your cost per mile is, know what your fuel cost per mile is, know what your variable costs are. Have a way to document those expenses and be able to point to them and look at them and be able to produce at the end of the month that profit and loss, the P&L statements, so that you can actually know how healthy your business is and where you need to make changes. Because one of the things that we, and like I said earlier, we're starting to make some, I know that we're starting to just, flips and everything are starting to come up about who in the hell are these guys that are out here with this rate per mile masters group and who are these guys? It's certain little subtle things that you're starting to see and hear. As far as I know, that different moderators that are in the group, the admins that are in the groups have been getting messages from different people and different opportunities. We had a great write up last week in the DAT blog.
Yeah,
and all
that's
that.
Great. Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, we really want the guys to take advantage of what we're trying to talk about. We're trying to raise the bar as far as the education. Because there's no continuing education for us guys out here in the owner-operator field. you know, and we have to have better education than just the lunch counter blase fare that goes on about, well, you know, I'm getting $6 a mile and the guy standing there with his big cowboy hat and big brass belt buckle, you know, that doesn't really do it for, you know, that if he not having any kind of substance behind it, you know, that's all sizzle and no substance. And what we're trying to
right.
do is we want to try to provide the meat on the bone versus the fat.
Yeah.
So, you
yeah.
know, and that's one we want, we're trying to get across.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is it seems like, you know, it's more, most of these guys here is very consistent. Yeah, you know, you're consistent. You're not, you know, even though you can take a lot of time off, and I'm sure you take time off to be with your family as needed, but you're really consistent. You probably learned that, you know, having that side of your job that you had to do that all the time. It was very out the year. I've done 3 miles.
Uh-oh, Steve, look like your phone is breaking out on us a little bit there, Steve. Look like we might lose Steve. I'm going to put Steve back on hold. This will give me an opportunity to bring in my buddy, my good friend, Chad Bobley. Chad, you there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine, Chad. How you doing?
Okay. All right. Cool. Went silent there for a second. Yeah. Hey there. I was looking forward to for that broker to come on, but that's all right. I was going to try to find another broker, but as you can tell, we've on the group, we've gotten quite a few new brokers that's on there, and I've been messaging them asking if they wanted to come on the podcast, you know, but, just tell them who you are. But brokers or broker agents, they get a little scared of that. Yeah, but I think you know, once they start to learn the people in the group and start conversating more, they'll be more willing to jump into the group and maybe come on the podcast and do some talking as well. I know if I had time, we could have probably found somebody that would have been willing to do it. And I like this, building a relationship with the brokers.
Yeah, and I think that's what my guy was really thinking about. You know, he was really wanting to come on. He was trying to look for an opportunity to be a relationship. But then, you know, and I was listening. It's funny that all this stuff kind of happened together. I tell you, things just have a way of sometimes things are different, are really weird the way things come together. I was listening earlier this week to, you know, we talked about it at the CMC. I listened to the Wharton Business School on Sirius XM radio, and they were talking about brand protection and how, you know, you would have thought years ago the tragedy that Tylenol had, you know, the conflict and everything that Tylenol had with their product when, you know, when they had the little scare where people were dying from, people actually died from taking Tylenol. But
Now
today, if you go into the stores, most people will go, if they need a headache medication or whatever, they're going to go buy Tylenol versus the store-branded product, even though they are chemically the identical same product. But it's due to the brand protection and the way that Tylenol handled their brand when they were going through their little crisis. And they compared, you know, Tylenol, the Tylenol Corporation, to Exxon, and you would think that Exxon would have not had such a big political hit. I mean, well, not necessarily political, but wouldn't have had such a bad PR hit for their company when they had the Exxon Valdez tragedy, because no one actually died other than animals. I mean, you know, not saying trying to minimize that, but you know, the animals and stuff that happened to get caught up in the Exxon Valdez, but no human life was actually lost with the Exxon Valdez thing. But they actually are still taking somewhat of a brand hit from their tragedy versus Tylenol, who was kind of basically fully recovered from their situation. And just thinking about that and relating, you know, brand identity and brand protection to, you know, with these brokers and everything, they don't want to come on and get lambasted or get something that they're not necessarily prepared for. And they are not technically the spokesperson for those companies. So I understood that, and that's not a problem. And like I said, I would hate to have, me and my guy, we have a pretty good relationship that was going to come on. We have a really great relationship. And, you know, that's my point of contact with that particular brokerage house. And I would hate for him to have to, you know, him trying to do a favor for me or do something and end up losing his livelihood behind it. So I totally understood that. And like I said, there still may be an opportunity pulling. There still may be a way we might be able to work that out and still be able to get them on board. We'll constantly still be working on that. But, Chad, we got another call on real quick. We'll take a call real quickly. And everybody that's on the line, if you got a question or a comment or anything, if you got a comment about the CSA, next week, as a matter of fact, good news, we have Mr. Dale Howell. He's going to come on. I should have planned it a little bit better. I probably should have had Dale on this week. But we're going to get Dale Howell on. We're going to have him to we're going to go into next week about how you can begin to market now your CSA scores. If you have a good score, how you can begin to work your CSA score to try to maybe improve it, but be able to market your CSA scores in order to drive a better rate from your negotiations. So we got going to go ahead and jump on the caller calling in from the 774. Caller, what's your name and what can we help you about?
This is Yari. Hey,
yes, sir, that's you.
Rico?
Yes, sir, what's your name?
Hey, how's it hanging? Hey.
We doing all right. What's your name?
Yari.
Okay, Rocky, how can we help you?
When a load gets refused, is there one person that makes that decision, or is it just any guy on the dot that wants to make a decision?
What type of load are you talking to specifically?
Oh, okay.
Are you talking about a refrigerated load, or are you talking about what?
No, we'll just take a dry van. But, you know, is there a designated person that makes that call, or is it just any guy on the dock that feels like, hey, I don't like this, and I'm going to refuse it?
That actually is a really good question. I don't think we've had that one before. But I think we can tackle it. Go ahead, Rocky. I'll let you say it.
Can you repeat the first part of the question? I couldn't make out what he said. The very first part of it.
Yeah.
He was saying,
you want me to do?
Go ahead, Rocky. You go ahead.
Oh no, you can do it because you heard it, and I'm not sure how good my connection is.
What he was wanting to know, Chad, he's asking us: is there a one person contact that are normally at a dock that makes a decision on if a load is to be refused or not? And generally, you know, there's a shipping coordinator or whatever, and they are the people that handle that. Now, if you have your own authority, there's a specific way that you need to handle that as well. Because
Absolutely. On
your bill of lading, is entitled to that property. And if they refuse that property, well, now you are a damaged party, and that freight still belongs to whoever initiated that bill of lading. Well, technically, I'm incorrect by saying that. It's not. You have to find out who is the owner of the freight, because that's who's going to be responsible for handling paying you, because now you got to transport that freight back. Then that constitutes another rate confirmation. There's another negotiation that needs to take place. And even if you have to, wherever you have to take that freight to, it could be off town, and just they could be putting it in a storage facility or a cross dock situation. That's a very you probably want to the first phone call that you want to make if you ever run into that situation is get your insurance company on the phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so the big thing is that there's one person that makes it, not just every guy driving around can make that call.
You definitely want to get some documentation before you pull away from that dock or anything. You want to get some documentation. You want to get some names, and you want to get get your broker or whoever involved initially. 9 times out of 10, they can get that stuff hammered out. I know a lot of times they pull this stuff with produce loads. because sometimes when you get to market in certain places, they may not even have that produce sold to where it's going to. And sometimes it may be a negotiation tactic on their end. All kind of crazy
okay.
stuff. Yeah, you know, we get, unfortunately, we get caught in the middle of some crazy situations out here. And, you know, that's the beautiful part about what we're trying to do as far as trying to help share and educate one another about how to handle those situations. Before you even pull away from that dock, you know, go ahead and get your broker on the line, let them know what is going on, make sure you communicate, like I was saying at the beginning of the podcast, spread bad news fast. That's bad news. Get that up off of them. Send that up the chain of command. Mm-hmm. Don't send that on up the chain of command. As soon as you get off the phone with that broker, get your insurance company on the line. Because at the end of the day, it's your insurance that's covering that load. So you, if you're dealing with any kind of, I know you said dry load, but for anybody that's dealing with anything that may be perishable or anything like that, these are very
yeah.
sensitive situations, and you want to make sure that you handle them with the utmost urgency. Chad, you got something you want to add to that?
I can, the worst case scenario, I can just give you a scenario of I had a load that they used to, I'll try to make this fast, a load refusal. The shipper was supposed to use cardboard between the material. It was like this some type of powder that was getting delivered, and it's only like knee high, but they were supposed to use cardboard between it and the pallet. They used paper. And along the way from Chicago down to Louisville, where it had to get delivered to, I just went around a curve and it slipped off the pallet, which, you know, wasn't my fault. But they wouldn't accept the load, and them not accepting the load led into going somewhere else, and seeing if they would offload it. And then they finally came to the conclusion at the end of the day on Friday to go ahead and take the boat back to Chicago. Getting a lot of background noise. Anyway, so but that's a whole other rate sheet, a whole other load. That's a whole other rate sheet, and I fixed the price. And they tried to tell me, well, we'll give you this much money to take it back to Chicago. And I'm like, hey, you're wrong there, you know. Now, you know, I'm the one that'll decide. It's all my trailer, you know. It's up to me what rate I'll do. I'm the one that'll dictate what the rate will be on taking your load back to Chicago if that's what we desire to do. And but the whole thing of coming home at that time was to get the truck serviced. And I was, you know, coming to Louisville brought me to Lexington, and I said, well, I got to put the truck in the stop before I go back to Chicago. And anyway, I held the load for the load was on my trailer for 10 days, and. But man, that thing almost turned into a nightmare. Anyway, the final solution was when the pilot got back to Chicago, they said that they up and wasn't going to pay for the load. They weren't going to pay for no part of it at all. And so then it got even more worse. And I said, well, let me know. I mean, are you refusing payment of this load? They said, well, you held the load for 10 days. And the story got really bad, and no reason to go into it. But I finally got paid on it. Those situations, know that when you have the bill waiting, because there's a whole lot we can go into talking about it. But yeah, they can be tricky when you get into a situation with a load claim.
Okay.
Did you have a scenario of where in a position like that?
No, no, just more for future reference.
Okay. Well, hey, go into the group and ask them the question. And if you ever get into, or anybody that listens to the podcast, that's what the group is there for. It can get very hairy. And if you don't know the right way to play it out, I see a lot of people, get hammered on stuff like this. I've seen a flatbedder, he refused a whole load of onions on him. They said that the onions got too hot. He was supposed to tarp it halfway instead of tarping it all the way. He went all the way from Oregon all the way out to Pennsylvania, and all those miles and everything. They said there was too many onions damaged, but they still took the onions and said, but there was too many onions damaged and they weren't going to pay, which was absolutely wrong, and he should have never been treated that way. you, how can you file a load claim on a load that you haven't paid for yet? A load claim is a separate event. It happens later. You have to pay for it, and then the load claim happens after that. I see that happen a lot of times where, well, we're not going to pay for the load. No, I signed a rate sheet or a contract that says and he should have got those onions back as well. That was another dilemma, a problem that he had there. But he didn't have the knowledge, and he said he didn't get paid nothing for the whole entire load, all the way from Morgan out there. So that's all I have to say.
Right, and this gives me a good, hopefully by this weekend I should have my website up and running. ChrisandCarriers.com, and this will give me a topic to go into for one of my blogs, one of my future blogs. I wrote that down: how to handle a refused load, and I'll tackle that and try to put together a blog, a step-by-step blog on how we should proceed on that and get all of the logistics and everything lined out. I'll try and reach out to Henry Seaton as well to try to make sure that we get, you know, as far as legals, the legal steps that we need to proceed on doing something like that. We got another caller from the 417. Caller from the 417. What is your name and how can we help?
Hey, Rico, Brian, how you doing?
I'm well, sir. Yourself?
All right. I just had a couple of questions. I wanted to answer that last caller on the bill of ladings things. The best thing to do is
Sure. Read
the bill of ladings. Read it.
Absolutely.
Document it. Read if it says protect from freezing. If it's shipper loaded, make sure it says it. That'll protect you if something else comes along. But
Absolutely. The
second question I had is I heard you a couple of weeks back talking about that NASTC.
Nasty.
Correct.
Yes, sir.
And I went to their website. I could not find anywhere to sign up.
that's probably a snafu on their end. There's something that probably needs to be brought to their attention. I think they want you to actually give them a phone call because they want... The big thing that they're doing right now is they want all of their new members to come in and go to their class that they have in Tennessee. But if you want to, if you got their website information and you know how to give them a call, you can give them a call, actually speak to Bobby, and they should be able to hook you up from there.
All right, that's great. Also, just further info, Atlanta, Georgia, all the Georgia scale houses, they're pretty hard during this crackdown, so be expected
yes,
to wait.
Yes, sir, they are. Yeah, that's just about any time, though, for Georgia, because I stay in Georgia, and I have free pass, and for some reason, my free pass never worked in Georgia. that's about the size
of it. You know why I stayed home?
They don't want it to work. They want you to pull in.
Yeah, they got
but,
it turned off.
I do believe
they got it turned off.
Yeah, I was there yesterday, and they were real deep in there. I mean, they were stopping every other truck, and there was no mercy. I didn't get stopped because I already had my sticker from 2 months ago, so they left me alone.
Yeah, I'm going to be rolling through Georgia early in the morning, tomorrow morning, because I got a delivery at 6 a.m. Back at home, so we'll see. We'll see if we can fly in under the radar, under the cover of darkness.
All righty, nice talking to you, and I'll go to that NATC, you know what I mean, website, and see if
yes,
I can
sir.
Make a call to them.
All right, Brian, well, thanks for the phone call. All right, well, Sam, we got another caller. Yes, sir.
Well, I was just going to, before we take that call, I don't have the truck posted today. I got it in the shop, but I did receive two phone calls and about there are some loads that are going out, and one of them I offered him to join the group, and he actually did. He joined the group. I told after it was my way of telling him that we were talking about the 3-day inspection that's going on, Anyway, he calls me up and he says, I got this load posted leaving Berea going to Laredo. And he's like, usually I can post it and offer $2,300 and my phone will light up and there will be all kinds of people that will take it. He says, I posted today and I got it for $2,600 and my phone's not even ringing. What's going on? And he calls me up. He knows I'm a carrier in the area. He calls me up. He's like, what's going on? I said, well, it's the blitz. You know, nobody, there's a lot of people that's not running right now. He's like, oh, is there that many people that's worried about it? It ain't that we're worried about it. We don't want to be bothered with it. You know, if we don't got to be bothered with it, might as well not even deal with it. But that was one. A Landstar agent called me as well, and she told us that similar stuff, you know, that they're having trouble booking loads. I mean, this is a great time for those that are out there surviving this and going through those inspections. This is a good time to negotiate that. I think so. We talked about it before on the group. I know if I was out there, I would be, if I was running, if I didn't have the truck in the shop, I know I would be a part of my negotiating. I know leaving here in Lexington, where I'm at right now, I could get some great rates leaving there. You know, that's an expedited run. They've been looking for a team to do that since yesterday on that load leaving Berea going to Laredo. I mean, he's at 26. I know he's desperate. I could probably offer him 35 and got it. I mean, that's almost $1,000
right.
More. But it would have been. I'm pretty sure I could have got it because he's not the only broker that's working on it. I've also seen where
I think this is a great case scenario, Chad, for everyone to really take notice of. It's not necessarily, you know, well, you could say it's a CSA blitz for the you know, because it's going on. But it's, at the end of the day, it actually really revolves around the true scenario of the spot market, which is supply and demand. The supply of trucks is not there. There's a high demand of freight to be moved, so therefore the price must go up. In order to coax, you know, to entice someone to come off from up under the bed and off from up under the covers from hiding from the CSA to go move load, you have to open up the wallet a little bit more. But, you know, it's just a classic scenario. You know, CSA has, you know, the blitz may have a little bit of a, created some of this tightening of the market. But at the same time, I want people to think about it in terms of let's remove the blitz away from it. And the same scenario, if you're in a market and your phone is ringing off the hook or the broker just keeps calling you, these are telltale signs that you are in a high demand area and you need to adjust your rates accordingly.
Absolutely.
Just to try to put it back into perspective there.
Were you
ready to take another call? We got a few more calls lined. All right, caller from the 507. Caller, what's your name and where are you calling about?
Hey, Rico, I'm Tom Keel. I'm already heading over to Ohio to load, but I was just going to compliment you guys on what you've been doing with this. As a carrier that runs a lot of committed customers, that opens my eyes, especially on bidding, even with one customer, just versus what you guys have been doing with the spot rates. And I see you guys bringing in these rates, and makes me see if I can maybe be a little bit more aggressive on my bidding when I'm dealing with my direct customers, and it's not to be afraid of losing them, you know? See what I'm saying?
Exactly. And one of the things that we want to bring up in another podcast I kind of got lined up is, we want to empower people to don't fall in for the race towards the bottom. You know, I was listening to the thing on the what separates a Ferrari from a Porsche. You know, both of them are high end luxury cars. I mean, what separates a Ferrari from a Corvette? You know, they're high end luxury cars or whatever. And so, the thing that we have to differentiate ourselves and the thing that we cannot compete with the big boys on is the big boys are good at giving a lot of trucks.
They got a high volume.
Exactly. And they can give them to you real cheap. Where our niche market is, we don't have the capacity per se, but we can give you top-notch service. And that's what we need
to concentrate on.
That's our product. Our product is service. And the guys and gals that are on this phone call and everything, you know, we are striving to be at the top tier of this industry. That's what we, you know, because we're taking time, we're committing time to actually take some time out to see if there's something that we can pick up from one another to buy a toolbox. I'm sorry?
Okay, going off what you just said, we've seen that same thing in the past with direct customers, you know, and then they go to the bidding process. Some of these bigger carriers come in and they underbid, and then pretty soon, if we lose it, then it seems like later they're calling us back because, you know, they get the poor service, and then they remember why they're paying us more, because we're delivering better service and we care about the product. And
exactly, and that's something that you might wanna make sure. I called in yesterday on Willis's show, and that's something that you might want to help educate your customer on. It's our job to educate our customers, and we have to keep them. We have to keep them, you know what I'm saying, because they may not necessarily understand how our pricing structure works and so on and so forth. And so we may not want to pull the curtain back all the way and show them everything about the pricing structure, but we need to show them and justify to them why it is that, you know, our price is what it is. And the way we sell them on that is by educating them. We have to, in order to educate them, you know, we ourselves must know what we're doing, and we ourselves must have some clue of what's going on in the marketplace. And that's the only way that we can begin to have that, open up that dialogue with the customers.
That's a great point. That's something to keep your eyes open, especially, well, another thing, too, to look at, kind of the struggle what I'm doing right now is a lot of committed lanes, whether I've kind of changed some thinking ever listening to you guys on spot rates and just trying to keep my volume up with the four trucks, the committed customers, and to maybe spread it out a little bit and go after some spot rates. And I've seen I still work with the same customers. I'm maybe not doing the same lanes all the time. But, you know, I'm not concentrating just on the volume anymore. As I've seen the money kind of make an improvement that way, too. I just want a lot of people remember that, you know, you might get a lot of volume, but, you know, if it's not working out on the rates, you can do better by chasing where they need you more than where you want to go.
Exactly. Exactly, and that's kind of like, you know, a lot of the guys that just love running the spot market. You know, that's sometimes that's some of the stuff that we get caught up in. But when I went into doing refrigerated and everything, that's why I kind of carved out and said I want to trade on the Southeast, because pretty much I can go from Virginia to Oklahoma and take, you know, back and forth between that and make a pretty decent living on the spot market. But now I'm kind of getting to a point where I want to begin to also transition from coming away from more of spot marketing and start to begin to concentrate more of my activities on beginning to build my dumbbells so I can start to expand or show some.
That goes a lot of the relationship building, too, like everybody's covered, and you've spent time building relationships, and now you can grow off that with maybe get something more committed, but still keep good rates for the service. So.
Right, right. So, did you have any other questions? Anything we can help y'all with tonight?
No, that's about all I wanted to add. I was just going to say on the bill ladings and rejection to load, just from our dealing with customers, and just, you know, everybody has a camera too. Like if it gets to be damaged product, just, you know, take pictures, and, you know, you can cover just everything. Cover your butt. Document. You don't walk away with nothing written. You know, make sure you write everything down, because they're going to be, if it's a major thing, they're going to be asking for that paperwork, even pictures. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, well, we appreciate your participation. Let me jump over here. I got a caller from the 770. Caller from the 770. What's your name? What you calling about? Hello, caller. Caller in the 770. What's your name? What you calling about?
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Hello, can you hear me? It would help if I took the mute off, right? Peace be on to you and Chad there, Rico. How you guys doing tonight?
Well, what was your name again?
Raphael.
Raphael, okay.
Yes, sir.
How can we help, Raphael?
Question for you. A while back, I had my own authority. I still have the numbers and everything. It was a single operation, but I recently married my co-driver, and we are planning on doing a team operation. And every time I look on the actual, we're looking at, you know, making the step and becoming a carrier again, reestablishing the carrier. But we seem to find that the spot market is kind of shaky for teams. Usually when you call them, they say, oh, well, we don't really have team freight, you know, but they have freight going to California all the time. They just don't want to pay a team rate.
Rafael, are you a member of the Rate for Mile Masters group?
Yes, sir.
You may want to. We can try and tackle it a little bit, but I prefer to put you in contact with someone that's actually doing teams. And there's a young lady, Olivia, and also Elizabeth and Kenny Long that both do teams. They may be better resource as to telling you how or what you might want to look for, how you want to target, because they've Kenny and Elizabeth, their operation's been going on for a little while now, and they may have a little bit, they probably could speak to it a little bit better authority than I could.
Gotcha. Okay.
Wasn't so late. I'm not sure if one of those guys may. Go ahead, Chad.
I talk to Olivia probably daily, and Olivia tells me quite often that it's more of a strong solo to a team to a driver and a half. Like, meaning it's usually not something. The lot of stuff that they get is not stuff that really keeps a team fully employed, but it's usually a little bit more than what a solo could normally do. So it's like a half of a team, I guess. That's what I put it.
Gotcha. So like an 800-mile run overnight would be something that they would look at, because it's a little more than what a solo can do, but it's not quite a team leg, so to speak.
Yes.
Well, let me ask you this part. Oh, go ahead, Chad. I'll let you finish. I got a question for Ron.
I was going to say, and usually those type of runs will have a strict appointment time. I've been coming across some really good teams, and I've been a team run. Like out of Dallas, the last one I did out of Dallas, I was going to Mount Sterling, Kentucky, and it was taking me to the house. I normally don't beg for loads, but this one here I was sort of begging it for, because it had good money on it. But they said, oh, it's a team run, and I was doing everything I could to get it. I'm like, well, I can do it in 29-hour transit time, which is legal transit. And I'm like, you know, how much better is the team going to have it? You've already told me that it's got to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning the next day. I'm like, you know, 29 hours, if I pick it up now, this time I'll be able to make it happen. Anyway, he used that to persuade it to his customer, and they gave it to me. Come to find out, when I delivered it there, they were saying we didn't need this, but I've seen that so many times. But anyway, there's some team runs out there, and I think when there's team runs out there, that there's so much ability to really get a good rate on it. I mean, because it's very slim picking with team operations that's looking for that expedited load. So you really get the name of price, and I would love to dispatch a team someday and just see how good I could really do with it. Maybe Elizabeth or Olivia can give me that opportunity sometime. But then go to the group, join the group, make friends with those people he just mentioned, Olivia and Elizabeth. They're a great resource, and both of them will help you every bit of the way.
Okay.
And the other portion of that which you might want to consider is, before you guys meet, you're doing team right now, and while you're in the process, you hadn't activated your motor carrier authority yet, might be a great time to begin to research where you guys are based out of. Start researching.
Well, we're out of your area, Rico. We're in Georgia.
Okay. Well, great. Well, start researching different guys, different commodities, so that way you can find out type of trailer would you need to get. Find, you know, start doing the homework as far as do you need to get a reefer? Do you need to get a driver? What would be the best trailer?
I got a revision, Rico. The boss just said we're thinking about moving to Texas, so maybe I should say in the future, when the carrier is up and running shortly, it'll be out of Texas. So, you know, I'm not mad at that.
Okay.
The tax rate is a lot better than Georgia is.
Exactly. But, yeah, you same scenario. do research on the companies in the area. That way you may be able to find a company. Now, it may not necessarily have to be a super long run. I had a situation present itself to me running some auto parts stuff once before, but the schedule was so tight you had to have a team on the truck. It was a 600-mile run. I mean, one person could do it, but the schedule was so tight on the pickup and delivery where you needed to have a team to be run something like that.
To ensure that it would get there on time. Otherwise, it would shut the line down or something. We're familiar with that.
So that's you know, that goes back into exploring, looking at your operation and your service that you could provide to someone from all different angles. Try to break it down from every different angle. That doesn't necessarily mean that you need to be running cross-country to run a team. You could actually run regionally and do quite well, you know, if you come in and you present the right, you know, the way that you package your service to meet someone's needs. You know, do some research on in the companies that are around. Facilitate.
So it's still not the quantity of miles. It's basically just the actual bottom line as far as the service is concerned. That hasn't changed, basically. It's not miles, like we are a company. Like, we're a company now, so it's basically we have to rack up miles in order to sustain.
Once you
know what I mean? Right. Go ahead.
Over into being a business owner, it's not mile. It's quality over quantity. You want more. Want a better rate per. You want to stay busy, but at the end of the day, your cost is your cost, and you profit is profit. So you want to be able to make sure that you run a tight operation, cost and everything, but you still want to make sure that you got a nice profit. And miles may not necessarily. Everything, if you get the right kind of rate and everything that you need to sustain your business model.
And just a trivial question now. When did it start when the brokers actually dictated what the freight will pay and not what the carriers will charge to move it? When did that start? That always was strange to me, because it was, you know, when I first had my authority, you know, one of the questions I used to ask the brokers, just, you know, being funny, they didn't think it was too funny, but I would ask them, well, do you go to, because I'm from New York, so I said, would you go to Pathmark or any food chain store and tell them that you're going to pay this for the food that they have on themselves? I mean, hello?
I love this question, I've said that, quoted that. Many a times, you are the carrier. You set the rate. You set the rate. But anyway, I've talked about this a million times. I'm right there with you. I like the idea that the carrier sets the rate. You know, when it comes into that, it's my company. I don't go to the mechanic and say, $120 per hour. I only charge $60. You know.
Exactly. So when the brokers do come that way, because I read a lot of negotiation books and stuff like that, win-win negotiation and everything. When they come with that Soviet style of negotiation, how do you counteract that? Like, do you just, like, ignore what they just said and just say, okay, well, I charge this and act like they didn't say a number at all, or, like...
No, what you do is, and if you're reading some negotiating stuff, you'll hear the term maybe repositioning or repack. You want to repackage. So, you know what I'm saying? So we kind of did some role on the call, and maybe that might be something that we might do again. But you basically speak back to the broker what he said. Like, you know, I want to make sure I'm hearing you right. And then you repackage your proposition. Well, from what you told me, it says that the load picks up in 1 hour. I have a truck that is available that can be there within the hour, and it's going here, and the delivery time is X. And I can make that delivery time, but in order for me to do this load and to provide you the quality service that you need and that you deserve, this is the rate that it's going to take to make that happen. And you have to know within yourself as far as what your position is in the marketplace. And they will play the games of all I have in it, so on and so forth, but you have to comes back into the part of making sure that you're up on your education and understanding the supply and demand of the market. If your phone is ringing off the hook, phone, and a good barometer, even in a hot market, some brokers and everybody will hold off on calling you until after lunchtime because now there's urgency attached to getting that load moved. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll be a little coy and try to play their cards a little close to the vest. Or even sometimes it is people like to try to book their trucks out for the week. And that's good if you got a good indication of what the spot market is going to be in that area. But a lot of times when you post your truck out way in advance, brokers try to use that as an advantage to try to manipulate you and to scare you into taking a cheaper rate than you, which you probably could.
Oh, okay. So posting out, like say if we were going from Atlanta to, say, Ontario, we know we're going to be in Ontario Friday. You're saying that the way that the spot market is working now, it wouldn't be in our best interest to post that we would be there Friday because the brokers would see and try to use that as a...
being your best interest, but what you have to understand, what I'm saying is, you want to post your truck as soon as you know you're going to be in the area. I'm just giving you different scenarios. But you need to understand what kind of supply and demand situation that you will be in once you get out there in that area. And what brokers, because is exactly that, is what's happening right now, right at this very second. So
on the spot, exactly.
So the market can change on you. You could be looking at a particular market, and it could be showing a 50-to-1 truck load to truck ratio at that very day and at that point in time. And then, say 2 or 3 days, or even the very next day, you go out there to that market, and it has completely shifted. And now it's 0.1 load to 50 trucks.
Okay. Because I looked at that on that trend line that you post a lot of times, and I think I get it mixed up. I think it's the first number is the loads, and then the second number is the amount of trucks that were in that area. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I thought I was looking at that wrong, but that's fine.
So you just understanding the supply and demand of whatever particular market that you're going to be. At that time, but you know, stick to your guns as far as your rates are concerned, because what brokers will do is that they'll try to give you a prime scenario. I knew that I was going to be in Laredo on Monday morning. Well, I posted it on Thursday when I knew I was headed that way. Well, I'm getting phone calls on Thursday, and even like I had a broker call me on Friday. Said, well, you know, it's a ton of trucks down in Laredo right now, but we're giving you guys a call first to try to get you guys on this load.
That's for you, I'll do it for
exactly. And he's trying to get me, and where we as owner operators, where we got to change the game and flip it is, we got to get up to speed as to what the load to truck ratios are and know what the value is that we're providing in the spot market at that particular time. And I know for a fact, for a reefer, and I'm getting calls from people that are wanting me to pull dry loads out of Laredo. Are you crazy? I got a reefer and I'm going to come out of Laredo with a dry load?
Yeah, that's bananas. Down there by the valley? Oh, no. I wouldn't do that either.
Yeah.
Not at all. That's a waste of equipment there.
Well, I don't mind. I mean, it's less wear and tear on my equipment, but you still, I'm going to charge you like a reefer. It doesn't matter to me what I pull at the end of the day.
I see what you're saying. I got you. So because you got a reefer unit, you charge reefer prices regardless of whether it's dry or not.
Well, that's in certain markets because of the demand. It's a very what we're talking about here on the spot and on the Rakes and Lane podcast and in the groups and stuff, this is a very intricate dance. And there's a lot of steps to this dance. And we want to try to get everybody, share information so that everybody can kind of put a little bit of more repertoire into that dance movement. And it's like I say, put another tool in your... And there's all types of things that the scenario changes constantly. So if you know, it's like a really complex mathematical equation, you know. But that's where the information comes in. you got the information, if you know that you're in a power position, then you know that you can hold fast rate, you can hold strong to your rate. You know that you you're definitely in a demanding spot. So you know you want to make sure that you don't give away your worship and your leverage.
Sounds good. Well, that's all I had for you, gentlemen. I appreciate it, and we'll give you guys a call back when we get the flagship running again.
All right, thanks, Raphael. We'll put you back on. We'll go to another caller. Chad, you got something you want to add?
I was just going to tell him to use low densities on internet truck stop. That's a good tool that I use. I mean, I'm addicted to it. I have to have it. They could double their price for that one tool alone, and I would pay it. It's low densities on internet truck stop. That's about the only thing I like about internet truck stop is that low densities, and that's all I go off of. It's number of, and it talks about the number of loads being posted in a particular state. I like yours too. I like your tool too. It'll narrow down like Chicago, Dallas area. This here just will talk about the states and it'll tell the number of loads being posted leaving a state and the number of loads being posted going to that state. So you know that there's less loads going to that state than there are more loads leaving. You know, good indicator there's going to be a hot demand for you when you get there.
Right. Well, we got a caller calling in from the 843. Caller, what is your name? How can we help?
Yes, good morning. Good evening, Richard. I was just calling in reference to the rates and stuff. I had a phone call. I'm an owner-operator. We transport cars. I had a gentleman call me up from, I think it was Florida. He says to us, and we, can you do all three cars for 27 cents a piece? I said, no, sir. And he said, well, we get this every day. I said, well, then what are you calling me for? I said, we can't do it under $2.50 a mile for all three vehicles. And he says, all right, click. And the next thing you know, he calls me back and says, hey, can you do it for this? I said, no, it's going to be $3 a mile. Now my truck's out of the area. And then he just finally hung up. But what I actually got on here for is about produce. I used to haul produce. I get out of hauling produce, and I'm pulling a hopper bottom. I love pulling a hopper bottom. But in the produce business, I had a guy right beside me. This happened about a year and a half ago. I told the gentleman, he was an owner-operator, knew at it. I said, do not leave your spot. They rejected a load of strawberries coming out of California. And
right.
I said, you need to get on the phone with the broker and talk to him first. Then I said, do not pull out of spot. I don't care if they tell you to pull out or not. Don't bring the cops if you're not pulling out of it. I said, get your insurance person on the phone and tell them you want a claim person down here on this dock now. And so it was a match here going on for a while. And actually, an insured adjuster come out to the dock, and they would not let him on the dock to see them strawberry. They called this, their insurance won't cover him on the dock. And he told him right there, I listened to the whole thing going on, that we have no claim here. If you don't want me on the dock to see these strawberries, then we have no claim here, period.
Right.
And that was it. So any owner-operator, stick to your gun,
but
stay to the dock. Don't leave.
But the other part of that's why I want to get back out to Henry Seaton as well and get him back on, because we have to be pretty careful about the times you waive all of your rights and remedies and on things where you don't even have to even come to you waive your right to adjudicate your claim. And
that's right.
We gotta come away from just willy nilly signing spot rate contracts, realizing that this is a slippery slope that we have begun to go as far as these contracts are concerned, and having to go to court behind some of this stuff, and you know. We all know the ignorance of the law is no defense. So we before we even, you know, before we even get down the road in a lot of these fields.
Yes, I mean, we got to cover, but we're, you know, as an owner operator, we're small. We don't have the overhead as these bigger companies have. And when they see that, they think they got the upper hand on the owner-operators, and they think they can do a little bit more with them, you know, to try to get the product at a cheaper price. It's not that it's bad. It might be something might be bruised or something like that, but they're still going to sell that product to somebody who's going to take it.
Exactly. And like I said, and all the produce haulers and stuff know that, you know, especially strawberry. I mean, I think everybody has an infamous strawberry story. You know, these are the games that they play, the produce and stuff like that. I love produce. And sometimes insane amounts of money to transport produce, but at the same time, it's a royal factor.
Yes. Yes, it can give you a pretty big headache pretty quick.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, did you have anything else you want to add real quick?
No, sir. That's all I wanted to say. And you guys do a great job on here and everything. But as an owner-operator, I just don't understand how these people are hauling 27 cents a mile, 80 cents a mile, on everything, freight and everything. TQL. I mean, we used to haul a lot for TQL, and they're like, well, we get this done every day for 60 cents, 70 cents a mile. I said, you better find that person. And
yeah.
if you guys stay with your rates, if everybody stays with their rates and holds their rates, them guys that are doing it for them cheap prices, them 27 cents a mile and stuff, you're going to see their trucks up for sale.
Exactly. It's going to tend to hurt out, but that's where, you know, that's what's hopefully, you know, us spreading the word, and we get more people to start, begin getting educated about rates and lanes and stuff like that. We can begin to, you know, not only will it help my business, it'll begin to help your business, it'll begin to help Chad's business, and everybody's, you know, hopefully, there's only good things that can come from people being educated and knowing everything is we got to know our operation costs. We got to know how to handle what our fuel costs are, our variable costs. We have to understand and know all these different things. Chad, I heard you want to chime in real quick.
Yes, that last statement you made, that's one of the reasons this group is so strong and growing and so educational and so good for people. One of the reasons why it was started. I mean, I believe a broker when a broker tells me they book a load that I am leaving, like, use Laredo as a good example. You can be in Laredo and one phone call, the broker's at $1.20. The next phone call, the broker's at $2.50. Why is there so big of a margin there? And you'll ask the broker, I'm like, are you really moving the load for $1.20? Oh, well, it's bad here in Laredo. Yeah, you ain't going to get much more than $1.20 out of Laredo. And then when you shoot a $3.50 to $4 per mile, they're like, you can't get that out of here. Nobody pays that. Yeah, you are. You'll get that out of here. You can get that. You can get it out of there. But there's just such a huge difference. And a lot of these owner-operators, they'll get finance for the truck. Okay, now I have a truck. And you know, they got the truck, they got finance for it, and now they're out there in it. And maybe it's a truck with not so many miles on it, and right now it's not giving them that much trouble. But they don't know the other part of it on getting the loads and how to effectively negotiate on it. And so they run the truck into the ground, never making enough money to put the stash away so they can buy the next truck. And when they finally get the truck paid off, but they have no money saved up, and they got to turn right around and do the same thing again. That's one of the things that contributes to this, and that's how those are the people out there that's grabbing stuff that's for $1.20. Whenever it shouldn't be at $1.20. There is no reason for me and another owner operator to be sitting in Laredo, and both of us get a load out of there, but I'm getting $3.50 a mile, and he's only getting $1.20 a mile. That shouldn't be. It shouldn't be like that. And the only way we can prevent that is more education, the group, more discussions, more mentors, more people helping out with helping out the owner-operators. And if not, you know, it'll be like this. It'll continue to be like this.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't want to sound condescending to anybody, but I mean, those are the bottom feeders. And the bottom feeders, you know, it's the free, you know, it's the free market at work. No one's putting a gun in your head making you take these rates. You have to understand and know your worth. You know,
yes.
I just can't stuff. Well, Chad, we're in overtime. We got three more callers. I'm going to see if we can't try and bust these out and try to get out of here by 8:30. We normally just do an hour, but we're in overtime right now. And great, Kevin is so graciously giving us a little bit of free reign to, you know, we're not restricted by the confines of XM. Well, I'm not going to say we're not restricted by the confines of having a strict format. So,
okay. I like that.
Let's see if we can jump to caller calling in from the 608.
Hey, guys. How's it going? It's Ray.
Ray
from Wisconsin.
All right, Ray.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the claims. What fellas need to remember is that we provide the platform for transportation. We don't own a forklift, packaging materials, and whatnot. And that's something that you also need to, you know, let the broker know about and remind them that the shipper bears some responsibility here for their product. But and there is a threshold for when you do need to actually file a claim with your insurance company. But before that, you always want to do as much as you can do working with the broker and the shipper to try and get this all taken care of before you actually file that claim, pay whatever your deductible is. But don't be afraid to call your insurance company because they pay people a lot of money to work in your interest, and ultimately they're the one that's going to pay the claim if there is a claim, and they're going to work vigorously to see that this claim ends up in your favor. So
absolutely,
that's
why I recommend that you get them on the horn almost immediately. That might be the second phone after you get off the phone with the broker and the owner of the product or whatever. That might be the next call in succession that you might want to be making is getting that person offline because
right.
Help, even before someone actually arrives on the scene, they can transfer you and get you in contact with someone and start to tell you exactly which procedures, how to handle what you know, what's going on or whatever until someone actually gets there on the scene that's going to begin to work on your behalf. That's why you
sure.
Pay your intern. You
right.
Definitely.
It would be helpful to try and maybe call your agent and find out what their procedures are. I've got a little pamphlet that I keep in my permit book just in case. But also, let's talk about the contracts. So you call to book the load. The broker sends you the contract, and mm-hmm. as you're reading it, when you read into the claims section, they want you to sign away some of your rights and, you know, all the brokers are different. They all have different contracts. The TIA, their contract is pretty nasty against carriers for claims. But here's what you do. I use my fine pen that I use for my logbooks, and when I go read through the contract, I draw a straight line with my ruler through the parts of the contract that I don't like. And then when you submit that contract, it's now considered, because you've altered the contract, it's considered a counteroffer. So you submit the contract, and if they go ahead and tender you that load and you haul it, that is now on them, because legally they have accepted your counteroffer. So,
well,
it sounds a little slick or whatever, call it whatever you want. But if you want the load and you don't want the BS liabilities that they try to put back on you, because what they'll try to do in their contracts is they'll put stipulations that we don't pay if there's a claim.
Okay. I want to make it quickly. And what you have to caution, because we got a lot of people that are listening, and we want to make sure that we're getting out as accurate information as we possibly can. I mean, I'm not an attorney,
sure,
but I about this specific topic, and because I had a situation that arose where I did exactly what you were talking about doing, was, you know, striking through. And what that attorney told me was that if something was to really happen by me striking through that contract and everything, that it sounds good and it sounds like a counteroffer, but if it goes to court, I don't have that contract signed by them after I've done a revision. Anytime there's any lines or anything stricken through a contract, from what he says according to the letter of the law, is that you need to have an absolutely brand new contract without any of that stuff on there. You can strike through it and initial it and date it and all that stuff, but if you don't have it signed back from the broker, which 9 times out of 10, they're not sending that back, or you don't produce your own document for them to sign, the best way to handle that, from what the attorney told me, is that if that's so be the case, you need to make an addendum to the contract. Don't strike through it. Make an addendum to
right.
the contract. Your
sure.
rule operation with your, you know, your standard operating procedures, with thereby covering how you handle claims, what your detention policy is, going through everything that's involved in a rule circular. And as a matter of fact, there's a website, and I'll try and dig the link back up again. I think it's transportationlaw.net. But if you go on that website, there is a one-page rule circular that they provided there that you can kind of download and make your own and have it added to your spot market contracts or whatever, so that you can cover all the things that you are talking about. But I just wanted to, you know, a lot of people are listening. They're trying to get educated. They're trying to learn. And I understand what you're saying. And a lot of times that's the way that we've been handling it in the past. And we had Henry Seaton on, who was one of the top transportation attorneys in the country, on the podcast during the CMC. I forget the date of it. And we may have covered a little bit of this also during that podcast. And I'm going to reach out to Henry again. And I would like to try to make Henry a regular monthly guest on our podcast, to come on at least once a month to try to help educate us and give us some knowledge as to the different things that we could be falling susceptible to as motor carriers. But you know, he's an attorney and his time is valuable. So we you know, when there are things that need an attorney for or something like that, whenever we have people on, you know, we as a community got to start to support them, to, you know, so that they can, you know, either try to get some free services out of them on the backside.
Yeah, absolutely. Got a question about that, Rico. The denim, does the denim have to be signed? Well, after you put the denim with it and you send it back to them, do they need to sign the denim and send it back to you?
You need to have it signed and put it in your file. It's just like when you go out and you get a new customer, if you go get a direct customer and you're not getting a credit application on them, you're kind of operating in a very gray area. When it comes time to, you know, as far as collections and late fees and so on and so forth, if you haven't disclosed it, that's why it gets into a hairy situation when it comes time to negotiate the tension paid if in the initial conversation before you book the load, if you haven't disclosed what your detention rates are, and then you come back after the fact and there's a problem and you start beginning to try to negotiate the detention rate after it has already occurred, but you didn't fully disclose the rate up front before the detention occurred, then it's kind of like you're trying to hold a gun to my head or, you know, you're trying to change the rules to the game in the 10th inning. The game has already started. You know, that kind of needs to be going over before the first pitch is thrown out. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Gentlemen, I mean, when a lot of these agents that you're dealing with, they're agents of the broker. If you just apply the denim to their contract and gave it back to them, that's pretty simple. But when you getting them to sign it and send it back to you, if they're just an agent, you're looking for the actual broker themselves to sign it. If I'm understanding that correctly, or can the agent sign it?
You know, if the agent has authority, is authorized through them, because I mean that's what the agent stands for. Agent is a force for someone else. That's part of their responsibility. But these are all of the big hairy tentacles that come with being a business owner. You know, it's great. You know, the great part about being a business owner, but at the same time, you're in the realm of the big boys, and nobody is looking out for your best interest. You have to look out for your own best interest. And
you're
this
right,
is where it gets into some other stuff, and that's why, you know, I want to try to reach out to get an expert, an attorney on, because I'm not an attorney. But I would love to get, you know, a transportation attorney to commit to us to try to be a regular monthly guest, and, you know, and we can just take phone calls and let him advise us on how we can handle these situations. But, you know, whenever we need something, I mean, these guys may be willing to give us a little bit of an hour of their time or whatever and come on and do stuff, but at the same time, you know, when we got somebody that's willing to do that and we know understand that it's their profession, whenever there's something that we can get done, you know, it may be something we need a new contract drawn up. Well, you know, go spend $200 with the guy that's, you know, coming on and sharing information with us so that, you know, he actually sees some reciprocity. You know, it's some reciprocity there. You know, it's not all one way. It's all give and no take, you know. So, you know, when we get these guys on, we kind of have to try to support them a little bit.
Yes.
Man, it's 8:33, Dan, and I need to run. And we got a few more calls. We're going to take – we got a call that's been holding for a while. I want to make sure we get him on, get them on. Caller from the 415, what's your name and how can we help?
It's Ted from the 415, and I just had some stuff about Mastic. If you wanted to contact them, I got their phone number.
Yeah, we'll just give out the website, Chad.
That was the thing. It was a little difficult to go through their process, but they do want to talk to you. They have a ton of information. I talked to Bobby Copeland over there, and he's just been fantastic. Very patient.
Luke.
You know, everything that you could ever want to know, they've got all the patience in the world. Very helpful. And I have found that it has been an invaluable tool in the just a couple of weeks that I've been a member of that. And, you know, listening in on what you guys have been talking about contracts and stuff, it gets you thinking. There's just so much to this game. There are so many pieces to, as you say, the dance, you know. And I had a couple other things. I know you're short on time. I can call in next week. And, you know, I appreciate everything that both you guys do. I really got a lot out of the CMC this year and talking to both of you there. And you know, I can put it on the back burner, and I could, you know, catch up with you next week on it. I am going out on my own, like I discussed with you guys, you know, beginning part of the month last month, and I have some questions, but I needed kind of the food for thought. All you know, hearing what I've heard today, I have so many more questions. Some stuff got answered, but I've come up with even more question marks.
That's a good thing.
It is. It's got me wheels rolling.
Yeah, post some of your questions to the group. The group is fabulous on getting back to you and responding to you on all that stuff. And if I have time, I'll even respond to them.
I've been reading. I've been going on there and reading a lot of stuff. I haven't posted a lot, but I've been reading a lot. And since the CMC, I went over to Reefer, and the rates are a little better for me over here right now, running California, Oregon, Washington. And as far as this blitz is concerned, they got more cameras. They got more people out in Oregon, Washington, and Northern California. I'm running a 3-sticker from last year, and I have not been pulled in. So I don't know about enforcement. There are more of them out there, but I'm not seeing a lot of action.
Yeah, they're definitely working in Texas and Louisiana. They're working pretty hard, and I imagine they're probably going to be working pretty hard across Alabama when I go through there. Well, Chad, we appreciate the phone call, buddy. We're going to get ready to wrap it up. We're getting pushing close to almost an hour and 45 minutes. Chad, you got any closing remarks before we get out of here?
No, I wish we could have took that last call. I got someone texting me really wanting to get on. I don't know if you had anybody in there or not, but you know, we can't go over the time. It's up to you. But closing remarks, hey, you got one more day of really making some good money with the inspection that's going on. I want to, on the group page, I want to talk about more of us owner-operators and carriers building relationships with the brokers. It seems like we got a lot of people that has trouble having the relationship with the brokers, where we need to work on that. We need brokers. They're there to find us good freight, and the better the relationship you have with the broker, the better off you'll be. I want to talk more about that for the next couple of days about having, and I also want to bring more brokers into the group. I think it's good whenever they start a subject. It just be more friendly when the brokers do start a subject and they start writing about something. Let them invite them into the group and be able to conversate about what they want to. Be professional. That's what it's all about. And they're getting to learn you. You're getting to learn them. This is a great way to do it and to build that relationship. So I'm going to talk more about that on the group page. And Rico, thank you for letting me come on the podcast today. Really enjoy it, and I like everything that you're doing for us.
Hey, no problem. But I appreciate you coming on and joining us because, you know, like I said, we definitely benefit from group thought, and wanted to have an opportunity to let everybody, you know, maybe get a different point of view. Like I said, our negotiation tactics are a little bit different, me and Chad, but at the same time, I feel like, you know, we kind of got kindred spirits as well. We definitely both want the best we want to try to pay it forward and get everybody up to speed as far as, you know, education-wise. Learning your work, knowing your work, knowing that you can get better, that you can do better. And the only way to do that is just by, you know, us just continue to try to spread the word. But next week, my closing remarks are that next week we're going to have Dale Howard on as our guest. He's going to talk to us in depth and detail about CSA and how we could use it as another marketing ploy when we're dealing with direct customers and also brokers. The CSA thing is real, ladies and gentlemen. We have to adapt to the changing tide that's coming. Not saying that, you know, you want to run the way that you want to, you know, it's your business. You can do it how you want to do it. But there is a play to be had with adjusting your price accordingly to, you know, it's 14 hours in a day that you're going to have available according to the FMCSA rules. And you have to be able to maximize all those hours. So, therefore, you need to start implementing plans as far as detention, how long you're going to wait for detention, how much the pay is going to be, so on and so forth. And we have to begin to condition the market to be ready for that adjustment. So we have to start incorporating that. You know, if it's coming down the pike, not saying it's going to be signed into law just yet or not, but we should be, you know, kind of adjusting just in case, so that when if it does get signed into law, we're not caught flat-footed and don't know how to respond. You know, it's better to try to respond before it comes down the pike than sitting there trying to respond at the drop of a dime and you're not prepared for it. So we're going to have Mr. Howard on to kind of help us, you know, incorporate, show how we can incorporate that into our pricing and also, you know, the benefits of dealing with CSA and how we can sell that as far as, you know, helping the brokers alleviate the vicarious liabilities and so on and so forth. So with that said, I'd like to thank you all again for your participation. We had a ton of callers tonight. I'm sorry we couldn't get to everyone. We pressed on. We did an hour, and we're right at an hour and 45 minutes for tonight. But I just, you know, I'm greatly humbled. Thank you guys for calling in. Thank you guys for your participation. Looking forward to continuing to build and grow the thing and get more information out. So tell someone, tell a friend about it. Go download it and spread the word. So for Kevin Rutherford and Lisa Rutherford and the entire Less Truck team, this is Rico Muhammad signing off live from Hammond, Louisiana, getting ready to pull out of the petrol, headed to Atlanta, Georgia. Thank you, everyone. God bless you. Good night.